This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to the Daily Digest on the Bigger Picture. I'm T. Xiao Yik with Lim Soo Ann and Sharmila Gunnison. Two stories this Friday afternoon. First, why are some people so fascinated with conspiracy theories? That's what we'll be discussing later.
And in our second story, we take a look at how male K-pop stars are changing how we view and understand masculinity.
So on that note, we are asking you on Twitter, how do you feel about boys or young men dressing up like K-pop stars? Your options are, it's great, it's up to them, or I'm not comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. So to take that poll or to share your thoughts, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us your thoughts at 018-789-8899 or call us at 03-7733-2900.
But first, here's John Lennon with Gimme Some Truth.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
That was John Lennon with Gimme Some Truth. What is the truth? Well, with all the conspiracy theories lurking out there, it can be hard to tell. So last week, The Guardian published an article about why people find conspiracy theories so fascinating. And the article itself is an extract from a book titled Republic of Lies, American Conspiracy Theorists and Their Surprising Rise to Power. It's written by Anna Merlin. And so the article is obviously taking bits from that book. So she details how conspiracy theories started to slowly encroach into politics in the United States and how this eventually culminated in the election of a conspiracy enthusiast as its president. Mm. This is a man who wrongly believes that vaccines cause autism, among other things. And she's, of course, referring to Donald Trump.
Surprise, surprise.
With the candidacy and election of a conspiracy peddler, conspiratorial thinking leaked from its traditional confines to spread in new and more visible ways across the country.
Yeah, so before we go any deeper into that discussion, let's first attempt to define what a conspiracy theory actually is. Yeah. So it is actually a belief that a small group of people are working in secret against the common good to create harm or to effect some kind of negative change in society, to seize power for themselves, or to hide some deadly or consequential secret. Mm. So an actual conspiracy, in contrast, is when a small group of people are working in secret against the common good.
Okay, all right.
So what might seem like a fine line there, but quite a big difference.
Well, theory and reality.
Yes.
Yeah, and the author of the article found that the people involved in conspiracy communities weren't necessarily some mysterious other. Mm-hmm. She said that we were all prone to believing half-truths or finding importance in political and social events that may not have much significance at all.
And yet we still don't know why some individuals choose to believe in conspiracy theories. So in a previous show here on the Daily Digest, we talked about flat earthers. And these are people who believe that the earth... I'm sorry, I giggled there. Who believe that the earth is flat.
I mean, yet they're actually... This makes up a fairly surprising number of people.
I know. I giggle, but a lot of people are so staunch in believing that the whole thing about the earth is round is a hoax. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we spoke to a psychologist, Dr. Karen Batash, and he discussed the appeal of conspiracy theories. And so here's a clip from that.
We as human beings are naturally very curious. We're very curious beings. We like to chase mysteries. Eh? We like fairy tales. We like thinking about alien life forms and so on. That's why we love books and music. Movies and so on. So that's a natural human tendency. We like to be curious, we like to chase mysteries. But number two, and this is very important, is that, for example, and you see that a lot in the West, when the economy is going down, when especially the middle class and the lower class are worse off than before, when it comes to their economic situation, their life situation, they start to distrust general institutions such as the government, public institutions and universities and so on. And once people start to distrust the general institutions, they start to distrust their narratives. They start to distrust the idea that, for example, the earth is round. They start to distrust the public or the common narrative behind 9/11. And so on. So once people are worse off, they start to distrust the things around them, and you see a rise of conspiracies.
So to add to that, the author of the Guardian article also made an interesting point about how conspiracy theories tend to flourish at times of rapid social change, when we are reevaluating ourselves and perhaps facing uncomfortable questions in the process. And I think an election period would be a great example of that, where you are uncertain about the future and where change could have a significant and long-term impact on what's going on around you.
And perhaps also a time when you may not particularly feel like things are within your control, right?
Yes. I think it's that loss of impending loss of control that makes people latch on to an opposing idea that helps give them some security, perhaps, you know. And when you really think about it, there are so many conspiracy theories out there, whether it's the existence of aliens or the earth is round or flat, but some have more followers than others. So how do some theories get more mileage?
So back in 2014, the Evening Edition team spoke to Jesse Walker, a historian, author and a journalist, about conspiracy theories. So here he is explaining why some conspiracy theories are actually more popular than others.
Well, it depends on whether they speak to people and how they speak to people. Even when a conspiracy theory says absolutely nothing true about the subject of the theory, if it catches on, it says something true about the anxieties and the experiences of the people who believe it. It becomes a form of folklore. And so it's the same as any other form of folklore. The ones that really catch on generally tend to be the ones that speak to some more popular sometimes would be more intense anxiety of some kind, an experience that people have been through, and this is a way to sort of turn it into an external enemy with a name, a way you can talk about something more easily. So I think that's ultimately, I mean, there's also some random effects, you know. I mean, people who study the spread of rumors will note that sometimes something will take off in one spot and not in another because, you know, somebody's grandmother believed it and forwarded it on, you know, on email. But even if you take those into account, the ones that really, really catch on in general tend to be the ones that, you know, speak to some greater anxiety.
That's true. That idea of anxiety driving the need to believe in these theories, right? And so while the Guardian article looked at the United States, we also have our fair share of conspiracy theories here in Malaysia. So politics, everyone's favorite topic. When we look at the events that took place almost immediately after our general elections last year, a year ago, by the way, there were people coming out with all kinds of claims. For example, that Tun Mahathir would go back on his promise and stay for a full term of 5 years and not stepping aside for Anwar, as was supposed to be the arrangement. Or even apparently Azmin Ali had a conspiracy to block Anwar from becoming prime minister. I mean, one could argue that these are, I don't know, this is just natural
speculation, sort of the rumor mill or speculation.
So at what point do they become conspiracy theories, though? It's interesting, if you go back to the definition, it's the belief that there's a small group of people were in a concerted effort to make this happen. So I guess we would have to see whether there really is the coalescing of people coming together to put this into action.
And I suppose against evidence that this is, especially when there's no evidence that this is happening, right? Then that would make it a conspiracy theory versus a real conspiracy.
Well, anyway, let us know what you think of our political situation and what conspiracy theories have arisen from it. Our usual lines, tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
But of course, when we're talking about conspiracy theories, one of the most prominent ones today is about the disappearance of MH370. Mm-hmm. And the incident stirred up plenty of conspiracy theories then and even now. There were posts online from netizens and aviation enthusiasts questioning whether it was a hijack, whether it was a suicide, or even an alien kidnapping. Mm-hmm. And in a situation like that, making these types of claims can be hurtful to the families of the victims, when they see it on these newspaper headlines.
Right.
On
or Facebook posts, or
WhatsApp messages.
Right. Yeah. And then, of course, there are also conspiracy theories with the unique power, I suppose, to cause tangible harm. You know, like when it comes to those that involve vaccinations, anti-vaccine activists actually have had a direct hand in creating serious outbreaks of infectious diseases like measles. They then argue that the outbreaks are actually hoaxes that are made up by the government, who are in collusion with Big Pharma to sell more vaccines. So these anti-vaccine movement, you know, the anti-vaccine movement is actually the most successful medical conspiracy. It's persistent, it's lucrative, and it's perpetually able to convert new believers in spite of overwhelming scientific evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and we see it so often as well. You know, some people pin the blame on Big Pharma for wanting to make people sick, while others claim that the human body can fight off these diseases like measles naturally without medicine. But this is not a problem that's just unique to Malaysia. It is a huge problem around the world.
And in fact, I'd like to quote a consultant pediatrician whom we have quite often on our show as well, Dr. Musa Nordin, who was addressing this Big Pharma conspiracy theory thing, that where people say that, oh, doctors, you're working with Big Pharma, you're getting commissioned to dispense vaccinations. He pointed out that if doctors wanted to make money out of this, they could let the kids get sick. Your treatment, your hospitalization, your ICU costs would come up to so much more than what a single or even a double dose of vaccine would be. So it's the internet, really. It's the internet that has made conspiracy theories prominent. But ironically, you know, the internet is also the platform where the theories are rigorously fact-checked. Those with a strong online presence, like YouTuber Alex Jones, he's this far-right conspiracy theorist in the US. So he's been subjected to a very thorough investigation of his claims online. Although I suppose you could argue that his believers will not be converted no matter how much you fact-checked him. Yeah. So, I mean, any quick ideas on, like, really, how would you, if at all, de-radicalize conspiracy theorists?
You know, I keep thinking that perhaps it's not so different from how we would educate people on how to recognize something like fake news, perhaps, like just teaching people to fact check, to look up different sources of information and not just rely on one source. Because these stories, they can be quite seductive, right? I remember as a kid that I was very taken with the ancient aliens conspiracy theory, where, you know, the entire human civilization was built by aliens and that it's all being hidden by the government. Because as Dr. Karim Betash said, it engages our imagination, right? And it kind of gives you some sense of, oh, something larger than just what's going on here. So it the evidence has to be strong and consistent enough to combat that kind of appeal.
But I think at the same time, there's some people also worry that by engaging with these people, we may be actually giving them a platform for them to voice their own views that are actually not sufficiently fact-checked, but they often have their own ways to entice you.
Very much emotional arguments. You know, again, if you don't engage, though, they're just they're creating their own bubbles where they're just drawing more and more people in. So I think not engaging is not really an option as well.
Perhaps not engage with them directly. But instead address the facts rather than, like, this social media or online back and forth, I think, is usually a situation where it's that side that wins. Because they are more willing to go down to levels and throw out things that are so blatantly untrue. And we are not able to operate on that level.
And also to address the underlying anxiety, because as we've heard, it's the insecurities, anxieties that occur in certain troubling times, perhaps, that drive people towards the alternative views. Anyway, we have to wrap up this story, but on social media, Sharmila?
So we are asking you on Twitter in relation to our story that's coming up. How do you feel about boys or young men dressing up like K-pop stars? The answers are, it's great, or it's up to them, or I'm not comfortable with it. So you can take that poll at BFM Radio. You can also tweet us your thoughts. You can WhatsApp us as well at 018-789-8899. online, or call us with call us at 03-7733-2900.
So yep, as Shamila said, that's coming up in our second story. Stay tuned for that. But first, here's Low with Lies on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.